Sure.
So, Tom, just to, for the record, spell your name to make sure I don't spell it wrong, and call yourself whatever you want me to call you, as far as, like, a title.
Tom, D-O-M-M-E-T-Z-G-E-R, Metzger.
Okay.
And I'm, sometimes I wonder what I am. I'm sort of in the spokesman situation for the Lone Wolves and Leaderless Resistance is what we call it.
Okay. Spokesman, Lone Wolves, Leaderless Resistance.
Right.
Okay. Are you all right there? Mm-hmm. If you get a problem with sound, you can't hear me.
Yeah, I just moved my ears around.
Okay. All right. I don't know, you know, in this internet age.
Sure.
You can gauge websites and how many hits they get.
Yeah.
And according to Alexa, you're in the 3-5% range, meaning top 3-5% range. It starts like at 1, it goes down to about 10 million.
Yeah.
And you're about 130,000, wow, which is pretty good.
That is good. I didn't even know that. I'm too busy.
What do you think it means?
It means people are looking for other answers. And a lot of people who are proud white people are looking for answers that don't involve being stupid, you know, being in a Hollywood movie with uniforms and flags and marching around and all that kind of crap. They're looking for something that makes sense. And they're also looking at people who are racially oriented, but they're economically oriented too. And economically, we swing more to the left in many ways. And that's something a lot of people haven't discovered in the media. They keep calling me a right winger. I haven't been the right wing for years.
Meaning like racially oriented but more socialist or?
Yeah, I would say so. I'm anti-war. I'm anti-fascist corporations. I'm against the power of the churches too because they control too many people. And so on many issues, I'm more left. And I've been that way for quite a while, but the press never talk about it. They keep trying to say he's an extreme right winger. And if you read what I'm saying in many cases, you'd say, that guy's not a right winger. In fact, a lot of the right wingers call me a Bolshevik.
All right. Now, you've been branded or called or characterized as the Lone Wolf, as someone in the spirit of the Lone Wolf. Yeah. What does that mean as far as your website?
Well, it simply means a lot of people, as individuals who want to remain independent and individuals and not risk their jobs and all that kind of stuff, can be very quiet behind the scenes. They can be working for the government. They can be working in all areas. They can be in the military. They can be in the police. They can be regular working class people and be lone wolves. And they don't have to join anything except with their mind, you know, change their mind on some things. And so they're not in danger, and they can help each other out a lot. In other words, I get tips here and there. I get phone calls, you know. Nobody says a name. We never ask for a name. Gives me information. That all feeds into the big thing.
So what would you call this? What is the...
I'm just going to adjust the tilt just a little bit, even though the bubble said it was up.
Okay, fine. Yeah, this thing feels you sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. May I continue?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, what's the energy behind this lone wolf concept as opposed to, let's say, a non-lone wolf concept?
Well, we've circumvented the old left and we've circumvented the old right, and we're out into that there where we're eclectic, putting things together that work. We try things and see if it works. If it works, we use it. We know that before any kind of a racial uproar happens in this country or Canada or wherever, it's going to first be an economic uproar. And then that leads people back to thinking more about their individual situation, more tribal, more like we are, more state sovereignty, more like the original Articles of Confederation were in this country. We despise the federal government. We despise both parties. We want nothing to do with either one. And moving in that direction. So when, and it is going to happen, things are not going to get better here real quick. People will be ready for it. We teach people how to survive and how to be self-served, you know, and how to live and how to eat and how to dig wells and how to have guns and how to know how to use them. Don't do crazy things and stay out of trouble as much as you can.
And
just to go got a hit on that wireless, just on the
Do crazy things. There was a little
Worry about that. I understand. Don't worry about it. A little hit here or there is not the end of the world.
Yeah, but he's from Chicago. It's got to be right.
That's right.
No, it does have to be right.
The town of Billy Sunday couldn't shut down.
I'm going to put this just over here so we can get him the nice.
Lean it. It's the best thing.
There we go.
Okay. So the end of that, it was a pretty good hit.
This was Billy Sunday's stomping ground right out here at Winona Lake.
Really?
All those big preachers.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy.
All right, we are rolling.
All right, so I'm just going to, if you can just give me a bit of that answer about self-sufficiency, preparing for that day with the economic collapse, if you can give that again about.
Well, like on my radio show that I do every day on the internet, we put out all kinds of material on eating right, living right, preparing your own individual situation so you don't depend on the government. Don't depend on the government at all if you can. And learn how to store food, have guns, but not crazy guns. You don't need giant warehouses full of guns. But that goes along with it too. Self-sufficiency. And it's amazing how we've gotten away from that. A lot of people in a big crash are going to die. They're just going to die because they don't know the basics on how to survive. And I keep telling people all the time, these morbidly obese people, forget it. They're dead the first week. People like that. So, and then we teach them about how to avoid agents and infiltrators, agent provocateurs, how to, if you're questioned by the police or federal officers or anything like that, you don't say anything. If somebody comes to the door, if they don't have a warrant, say, get out of here, nice day, don't have to be mean, but I'm not talking. If they ask you to come to the police station, they haven't arrested you, don't go, don't ever go, and things like that. We sort of operating like you were behind the Iron Curtain in a way, you know? And that's where we're getting. I mean, this government's gonna, we whipped communism evidently, economically, but we imported it socially to where the government's becoming more and more dictator.
So you give people a chance who have racial views like yourself a chance to defend themselves, basically.
That's right. That's right.
You put that in your own words.
Yeah. Yes, people should be knowledgeable on taking care of their own problems, not depend on other people. Our people that I know all over the country, if I have a problem, I can't call upon them to come running to Tom Metzger. I have to take care of myself, even though we may be associated. But there's no way, being thousands of miles away from each other, you have to do it yourself. And there's all kinds of people that aren't racial doing this. I mean, there's millions of people in this country doing that that don't agree with my racial views. But that's good.
But that's a way to keep your views strong, by people being independent.
That's right. It's a way to keep my views strong, by keeping people independent. You got to get them totally away from, as much as possible, depending on the government for anything. And always assume every politician's a liar and every president is a sociopath and is going to just drag you into more wars and get your sons and daughters killed.
Okay. What do you see as the major message of resist and your other sides? What do you see it as?
I see it as white survival. In other words, our white population is shrinking fast. And we're not going to try to outbreed the non-whites, because that's almost impossible. But we're going to have to maintain areas of the world, areas of the country, for the white race. And to do that, we work with people in Russia, Eastern Europe, South America, wherever white people are. We're in league with those people. Don't have to join any kind of group or anything. But you just can't bring millions of third world non-white people in, all bringing a kid under each arm, until pretty soon you're just totally swamped and your culture is gone. And I mean, anybody would have to admit that, even the people who like it and brag about, pretty soon white guys are not going to be around. I mean, you know, and they're white, you know, that's sort of sick, you know.
So where do you see the role for, not the role, but where do you see blacks in the context of America or Chinese in the context of America? Where do you see them?
Well, we don't have the power. Let me tell you where I'm coming from. Now, like at the time the first slaves were brought into the United States, I'd have been the guy out there saying, turn the ships around, take them back. There never would have been a plantation system. I would have been a rebel fighting against it, because that was nothing but capitalism, where blacks were just something to own, and it was a bad thing for the poor white people in the South. And like that, everybody, you know, these sort of capitalist plantation owners lived like kings, and the poor people didn't have hardly anything, whites. And so I would have been probably hung for fighting the plantation owners, because the South could have been a wonderful place like the Midwest with small farms and all that kind of stuff. Instead, it turned into this crazy black thing with the plantation owners. So I wouldn't have fought for the South, and I wouldn't have fought for the North. Industrial North was just as bad in many ways. I would have probably got on a horse and went west for a while, like Clint Eastwood.
But in the context of America today, what do you see?
Well, I see the culture just falling apart. I mean,
I'm sorry, I meant in terms of like black presence, Chinese presence.
Oh, well, the black I'm going to shoot straight. I mean, the black race to me is a pariah. It's a parasite race. And I'm not saying that because I hated all the black people. I'm just saying that that race has been terrible for our country and our race, even though some do rise up. Overall, it's been bad. And if we had not ever had any black people in North America, this would be an entirely much better and a healthy culture. So I believed in, they wanted to have racial separation and ship blacks back to Africa. Unfortunately, I'm going to be honest with you, it's too late now. There's going to be a hell of a war in this country. It's going to be all kinds of factions. Now you're bringing the Muslims in, and then you got the 20 million Mexicans, and you got millions of blacks and the whites, and everybody's getting trigger happy. And with an economic collapse or downturn, Ben, they're just going to start shooting. And I can't cause it to happen, and I can't stop it from happening. And I've been warning about it since the 60s. I mean, there's no way out. There's no way to vote yourself out. There's no way to demonstrate yourself out. We are totally under the heel of the transnational corporations and the banks. And we have no say whatsoever. But they are so greedy, they're going to screw it up. It's going to crash in Europe, crash here, and then watch out, because then all the guns are coming out. And everybody's going to be fighting for their little bit, you know?
So, when you talk about banks, transnationals, I guess that's where you see the Jews come into this whole picture.
Yes.
So maybe you can tell us how you see the Jews coming into this picture.
Well, I began to see where the Jews are coming in when I started studying economics and international banking way back in the 70s. And I could see all over these banks, the Rothschilds, all these Warburgs, all these your bankers, and how they financed communism and how they paved the way for take over Russia, all this kind of stuff. And I kept seeing all this stuff. Wait a minute, what are these Jews doing? And so I became, an ardent student of what they're up to and what they're doing. And I'm a great critic of them riding on their sick laurels of the Holocaust, so-called Holocaust. And they're using that to beat everybody down. When most people would say, well, a lot of Jews died in World War II. Why were all the Jews involved in helping create World War II? World War I, the Versailles Treaty, Germany crashed, everybody was eating out of, not everybody was eating out of garbage cans. So along comes a guy named Hitler. I said, well, I wonder why they followed that guy. Well, he put him to work. He put him to work, and their standard of living went way up. If I'd have done anything to Jews, it would have been at the top. I don't believe in this picking on the little guy. I want to go to the top. I had rounded up all those international bankers, the Rothschilds, the Warburgs, taking care of them. You put them in a concentration camp or something, you know. But they seemed like they got started at the wrong end. They started just with the working class and stuff like that. Things got way out of hand. I agree with National Socialism in the beginning was a good idea, and it was doing quite well. And if it hadn't been for this Hitler making a deal with the Krupps and the Thyssens and the capitalists, they wouldn't have had international war. And National Socialism would have kept building Germany into a super country, I mean, you know, which it was becoming in the late 30s. So I don't run around picking on Jews, but I'm not going to back down from Jews either when they call me anti-Semite or whatever like that.
Well, in today's world and in today's economy, do you see the Jews playing another pivotal role in this collapse?
Well, it's the same role they've always played, get in and control the money. And now, of course, in the media. They're so powerful in the media. But I don't let my race off the hook. I call them large percentages of my race, we call it Jew think. They're not Jews, but they're thinking like the Jews. So they're just as bad or worse. At least the Jews got, he's doing, rowing his own boat. But these white guys like me who are selling out to international finance and the top Jews, they're worse. So if it ever come to it, I'd be rounding them up first.
Do you think there would be a backlash against Jews if the economic collapse happens the way you think?
There always is. All the way down.
Can you put that into your one words?
All the way down through history. The Jews, for better or worse or whatever, they get it when things go bad. Going way back to when the kings hired Jews as the tax collectors, and they'd send the tax collectors out because the Catholic Church wouldn't allow them, Christians, to collect the tax. They'd go out there and tax the hell out of the peons till finally the peons would rise up and kick the ass of the Jews and kill a bunch of them, and then the king would send the army out to save them after a while. He let them get butchered for a while, and then he'd send the army out to save them. This has been going on forever.
So how do you see it in the future of America today in the role of Jewish finance, etc., and the big collapse that you seem to think
well,
about?
Number one, in the big collapse or whatever, we should not have bailed out anybody in the banks. They should have all been, no, we're not bailing you out. Whether you're a Jew or a Gentile or what, we're not bailing you out. They all would have taken it in the shorts, you know? And over in Europe now, I really like what Iceland did. They told the banks, go fish. And the banks, they went to fish. Iceland's doing pretty good now, recovering. But all these other countries that are trying to pay all this money, debt, and you ask yourself, we're talking billions, who does it belong to? If we have all these billions of drugs, who does it belong to? Give me a name of a couple of guys who it belongs to. It don't even make any sense. No, it's all the credit scam, and that keeps everybody in slavery.
You know, when World War II happened, as you mentioned, there was this big backlash, and then
right.
It took it out against Jews. I just wonder if you think in this big backlash that you're anticipating, will they come out and take it against Jews again?
Well, in every era, when things got tight, a lot of people did turn on the Jews, and a lot of them deserved it. World War II, 55 million people died in World War II. I don't think that was just taking it out on the Jews. We all got in the shorts on that, and that's why I'm anti-war, and I will not support any of the wars or any of the going into other countries. I was opposed to Ronald Reagan in Central America. I was opposed to the Contra. I lost my house the first time back in the early 70s because I wouldn't pay taxes to support the Vietnam War. Now, how right-wing is that?
You've lost your house a few times.
Yeah. But if you're not prepared to lose what you've got, you better not do it.
You talked about the you had a cartoon there in your site, and you talked about the Jewish army in the U.S., or the U.S. serving the Jewish army? Can you expand on that? I didn't quite understand what you meant by that.
Well, like my grandma used to tell me, war is a Jew harvest. And down through time, the Jews have been in the cat's paw of international finance, along with a lot of people who weren't Jewish. But they're always there. You study history, they're always there, and it always leads to war. It always leads to war. That loaning out to this side and loaning out to that side at the same time. They used to do with the kings, and then the kings would go to war, all that kind of stuff. So if the Jews can prove to me that they're not involved in transnational corporation and banking, and they don't have a very strong control, well, I'd like to see where it's written down, because I don't believe that. I believe that I don't spend my whole life and every day sitting around thinking about Jews. I mean, if a Jew comes up to me around here and says, let's have a cup of coffee or a beer, so okay, we'll talk it over, you know. I don't automatically grab it by the throat and start beating on it. Same way with the black.
But do you think the wars that America are involved now are a product of some Jews?
Part of the money-making of the big Halliburton and all those boys, and here again, a good share of those people are not Jews, but it all feeds into the Jew thing someplace. You'll find them someplace. And they're making billions over there, these contractors, and then their private armies and all this kind of stuff. And of course, I say, well, bring them home. And don't let any more soldiers go out of this country into, you know. And if they're Jews, and if Jews are not involved, good. But if they are, they're going to be punished just like everybody else.
A lot of people in similar groups like yourselves talk about Jewish domination of government. Do you believe there's Jewish domination of the American government?
I think most of the legislation is written by aides of the congressmen and senators and groups that supply them. This is it, and there's not one congressman or senator that would possibly stand up and say anything even the least little bit critical of the Jews. They may criticize a little bit Israel, but there isn't a congressman or a senator or a president or anybody that's got the balls to stand up and say, that Jew is a rat.
Why is that?
Intimidation. It's financial. You know, he who controls the purse strings controls your job. I mean, congressman from Ohio, Findlay, wrote a book about Israel and the Jews, and hell, they poured a tremendous amount of money into getting him defeated, and there was nothing wrong with what he wrote. When I ran for Congress in 1980 on the Democratic ticket, when I won the Democratic nomination in the primary, tremendous amounts of money came in to finance my opponent. And Beverly Hills, you could track it. It was coming in from Jewish areas all over the country. Miami, Beverly Hills. It didn't take a genius to figure it out.
You know, there are a lot of left-wing groups in the United States they don't use the term Jew. They use the term Zionist. Zionists got too much power in America. They got too much power in the Congress. They got too much power there. Do you see any difference between Zionist or Jew?
They're hypocrites. They're hypocrites. Just come out and say it. If you don't like a Jew, say, I don't like a Jew. Don't beat around the bush. A lot of the left do that and just do Zionism, you know. It's just, if you don't like what the Jews are doing, say it, you know. I never believed in beating around the bush, and maybe that's maybe why I'm where I'm at, but I hate that. I hate that. And
why do you hate it?
Because it's not honest. I don't like dishonest people. I mean, people can be wrong. People can be misspeak. But tell the truth the way you see it. You know, Daniel Webster said, if today you have an idea, speak as if a cannonball is issuing from your mouth. But if tomorrow you change your mind, do the same thing.
So when they say Zionists, you say, have the balls to say you're talking about Jews?
Yes.
Put that into your own words. Please.
Well, I'm saying that most of the people who scream Zionist on the left and the right are just hypocrites and don't want to say Jew. They're scared to say Jew. And you know what's funny now? You got 10,000 Israeli Jews marching in the street, demonstrating like hell against the big shot Jews in Israel. So they got their own problems over there too, you know. So I run into a lot of honest Jews. Friends of mine used to call them tame Jews. I talked to them. We were, you know, agree with each other on a lot of stuff, you know. I think that the bulk of the Jews are cowed into supporting a lot of the big shots because they're afraid not to. They have tremendous power. You right there in Canada, the B'nai B'rith. I used to track their money coming into the United States right down into L.A. for the Anti-Defamation League and all those people. Big cash money coming out of Canada through the B'nai B'rith. Yeah. I had people in the position.
And what did you see? What did you find?
Well, that there's tremendous amounts of money being used to promote the Jewish program. Now, it wouldn't be, I wouldn't have any problem with that. Everybody's supposed to support their own situation, right? Mm-hmm. Jews should take care of Jews, you know. They don't, but I mean, the top ones do. But, you know, New York City, 10 years ago, 250,000 Jews living before the below the poverty level. Mm-hmm. So they take the high rollers, take care of each other. But they shouldn't be allowed not to take criticism. But, of course, I can't altogether blame that on them because the other people, black, white, and everything else, are so cowardly that they say, oh, man, if I say Jew, they're all going to come down on me. They do come down. They come down on me. I wrote something about the Holocaust in the paper here, which didn't even get into the, a lot of it. And, God, the paper letters came in the paper like I had just joined the Nazi party or something. In fact, they called me a neo-Nazi.
What did you say, just out of curiosity?
That's bullshit. I'm not a Nazi. And of course, Nazi is not even a correct word anyhow. I have leanings toward National Socialism because between capitalism and Marxism, I think it's the only way out. But this neo-Nazi thing is a press thing, a media thing, a Hollywood thing, and a new Nazi. I mean, you know, well, that it's just a buzzword, you know, like the extreme right.
Is it like a Jewish media thing? Is he talking about Jewish media?
Well, I'm sure they're pretty happy it's that way. I think you'll find if you go back to the beginning, like it was this Ehrenberg, Ilya Ehrenberg in Russia. After the war that started this 6 million thing. He was the first one out, wasn't it? Yeah. All of a sudden he said 6 million. Everybody in the world, oh yeah, 6 million. Well.
Okay. Now, what do you think about the free speech laws in America compared to like Canada? You obviously got thrown into jail in Canada. What do you think about the differences between the two of them?
Well, this is the only country left in the world where you have a reasonable amount of free speech. That's all there is to it. Any other country, if what I say, I'd be in jail. I mean, over even a lot less than what I say. I'd be in court every day in Canada. So the United States, with the freedom of speech that we still do have, we don't get the freedom to speak like beyond big time TV shows anymore like we were. But that's the only thing we're hanging on to. And, of course, I've said before, once my freedom of speech is gone, hey, then all bets are off. It's violence. I will go violence. If they take away the First Amendment, I will advocate violence all the way across this country. But as long as I've got freedom of speech and I can get my ideas out, I'm a pretty easygoing guy. You might not like what I say, but I'm not hurting anybody.
So what do you think about laws like the laws they have in Canada?
Well, Canada, to me, I think you're freer in Russia now than Canada. I mean, you're free to do what they want you to do, whatever society and power people think it's okay to do, you're free. I mean, even the Soviet Union, you were free as long as you didn't go too much against the government. Most of the countries of the world, as long as you don't criticize the government and try to change the government, it's okay, even though you may not be eating too good. But Canada, I have no use for Canadian government. I have lots of friends in Canada, and lots of them have been to jail and prison and so forth for saying a lot less than what I say.
Okay. And in Europe, I mean, it's pretty tough laws in Europe, too.
Yeah, of the whole world. Except when I go to Japan, and I've been there a couple of times on tour and spoke to 400 or 500 people at a time, they welcome me with open arms. I have no problem at all in Japan. They don't give me any trouble. They're courteous. They're nice. They don't call me names. They feed me well, the whole bit. Put me up in the best hotels. So in Asia, I guess I'm okay. Maybe I'll try to go to China. I don't know. They might grab me in China.
I don't know. you lived in the world before the internet, and you live in the world in the internet.
Yeah.
What has the internet done for you as far as your message?
Saved me a lot of airline miles, I'll tell you that, because I don't have to go anyplace. I can do it all from wherever I'm at. I did it in California from one little house, and I'm doing it here in Indiana from one little house, in fact, a smaller house. I have total contact all over the world every day. I mean, I'm talking to people in all these countries I never could have talked to before. I mean, I used to use ham radio at one time, but it's not as easy on ham radio as it is on the internet. So the internet's been great. It's the greatest democratic tool that's ever been invented for everybody. And you get total truths and you get total lies, you get everything, but it's all out there where people can discuss it.
Has it greatly, what has it done in getting your message across?
Well, when you say that it looks like our website is maybe in the top 5% of websites, it's just a simple little website and it doesn't cost that much, that's something else. I mean, there is a power there, I guess. I don't sit around worrying about how many people are checking in. I'm happy if everybody does, because I get email from all over the place, pro and con. It's great. And that's why I got my son into it early on. When Radio Shack sold that first computer, the TRS-80, that's the one where he had to store stuff on it, cassette tape, memory, 4K. I went right down to the store and got him one. One of the best thing I ever did. So then we got into computers way back there.
You sort of mentioned this before, but I'd like to go back to it again. A guy sitting in a government job, he can't talk like that if he goes outside. A lawyer working in an office somewhere. What is the internet in your sight given them that they never had before?
Well, number one, he's given the lone wolf. I tell people all the time, you don't even know who you're working next to. One of our people, and I tell our people, if you need to pretend you're on the other side, go ahead. If you need to pretend, if you're in the military, police, or whatever, if you have to pretend you're a big liberal or racially, pretend. You've got a perfect situation. Just keep your mouth shut. And the internet then allows them to download a lot of information that nobody has to call them on the phone or send them anything in the mail. And if they don't start downloading a bunch of stuff about shooting people and blowing things up, they're probably not going to be looked at.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
What I'm going to do now.